I'm Adam Gorney. This is Adam Friedman. This is the Respect My Decision podcast from the Rivals 5-star in Jacksonville. And today, Friedman, we're going to talk quarterbacks. Three big ones were here. Number one, Juju Lewis, 5-star Tavian St. Clair, 4-star, current 4-star Keelan Russell. The one that wasn't here was Bryce Underwood. We would have loved to seen him here. It would have been great to have all of them all in one setting and in our setting to get a real feel for them. And the question that we're going to talk about today is, Keelan Russell is definitely going to be under 5-star watch. We're going to have him, there's going to be a discussion in August when we redo rankings. That's going to be an important thing. But who's number one now? And it looks like it's going to be a quarterback. We don't know which one. Julian Lewis certainly did nothing to knock himself off of there. It's not like clearly he's not number one.
Right.
What did you see from him throughout the weekend, especially on the field, that makes you think that he could stay there?
Yeah, Juju is a guy who is just so consistent from one event to the next to the next. I've seen him now multiple times this offseason, and really throughout his career, he is on the money almost every single time. His mechanics are copy-paste from rep to rep. Really good footwork, a really calm demeanor. But what I saw from him between reps was kind of the revelation for me this week. It was kind of a lighter atmosphere. He was having a lot more fun with the camp process and going through these reps. He's been to events with these players multiple times this offseason already. And I think just that relaxed atmosphere we were able to see a little bit more from him and why there are so many players out there who want to play with him at the next level, and why coaches are kind of drawn to him. You know, they can't really go up to him in public or on social media, but it seems like he's got a really good connection with a lot of coaches out there, and we've got a better idea of why that is now.
Yeah, and on the field, I mean, he's proven it. You know, he really only had his sophomore year.
Yeah.
Put up huge numbers at Carrollton, looked awesome. There were other people that, really stood out throughout the year. But then he reclasses. He's going to be a senior this year. He'll put up big numbers again. It's almost guaranteed. He's a phenomenal on-field player. There have been Bryce Young comparisons. There are differences, though. I think Bryce was a little bit more instinctual. Like, he got the ball out before you could even see what was going on.
Yeah, his timing was a little bit better.
I would say Juju's deep ball is at least similar, or if not better. The elephant in the room here is that there are some, off-field concerns, not necessarily major ones, but, and I just think it's a little overblown. Like,
yes.
What quarterback doesn't think they're the best player in the country? What quarterback doesn't think he's hot stuff? You know what I mean? It's like, okay, so I just don't get it. And I want to defend him here and say this. Like, he didn't need to come to the Rivals 5-star. He didn't need to do Elite 11. He was on visits. He's flying all over the country. I talked to his dad a little bit, and before his visit to Colorado, I think, he had like 24 hours at home to repack and fly out there. Or another visit that was, because he flew from the Elite 11 right to Colorado, right home. He was sort of questioning if he should come here, and he had 24 hours. He got on a plane and came here. So it's like, okay, so, is everybody's personality the same? No, it's not. But he's still a very talented player, and if he stays with USC, he's going to a coach who is basically – almost guaranteeing you a first-round grade and a shot at the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, and he has such a similar demeanor to Caleb Williams. I was with Caleb for 4-plus years when he was at Gonzaga in Washington, D.C., and just getting to know him and his family, there's this confidence, and he's so singularly focused on what he is doing. He doesn't care about what you're doing or what you have to do to get your interview with him or anything like that. It's just he's so singularly focused on what he is there to accomplish that what you're trying to do doesn't matter. And it's not in a, like, I don't want to do anything with you guys or talk to you. It's just it doesn't impact him in the way that you would want it to necessarily. And that can turn a lot of people off. And we saw that in the draft process with Caleb Williams this year, really.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, yeah, there's all this pre-draft talk about Caleb Williams is unlikable and what kind of teammate is he and all this kind of stuff. And you were talking to people, and I was reaching out to some sources too and being like, okay, yeah, okay, is he like the most outgoing, friendliest, nicest person in the whole history of the world? No, but not everyone is. But the Chicago Bears took him at one. It was really no question. You know, the media cares about him painting his nails and crying to his mom after a game. And it's like, whatever, man. It's like, stop looking at that and start looking at the on-field performance. What his teammates say about him. His teammate at Carrollton, Shamar Arnaud, committed to USC at the Rivals five-star. He's a teammate of Juju, and it looks like they're going to try to play together in college. So let's stop talking about that because it's just endless.
You can go in circles for this.
You could go in circles. So that's going to be an interesting debate, though, because I think Tavian St. Clair has the best chance of moving to number one. And it's not because he did Rivals five-star. It's because he looked great at it. Mm-hmm. He's looked great at Elite 11. He's been getting better at 7-on-7 and more comfortable. He's the size of Drake May right now. He's going to Ohio State, which means he's going to be surrounded by elite playmakers. All of that kind of comes together, and it's certainly something that we're going to have to discuss.
Yeah, I wrote down a couple of notes on both of these guys just in the early position drills from Wednesday's event here in Jacksonville. And for Juju and for Tavian, it's consistency. From time and time again, mechanics were right on the money. Ball was right on the money. Arm strength right there. Footwork right there. Weight transfer, all of that. And then you mentioned getting better in 7-on-7. He can show that he can layer the ball better. He can throw to the opposite side of the field better. He's got better downfield accuracy in these elite environments. And that's what's really helping push him up the ranking. Seeing that progress against better competition, seeing that progression over the offseason, it's really been impressive. He doesn't play great competition during the season. He plays okay competition, not the best, but in the offseason, showing what he can do with his arm, showing he understands these advanced passing concepts, that's what's going to help him see the field fairly early in his career, depending on how those quarterback dominoes play out in Ohio State. But I really like the ceiling that Tavian's shown that he has, and physically, I mean, he looks like an NFL guy right now.
Yeah, there's sort of history repeating itself here. We got C.J. Stroud ranked pretty high, but not high enough, obviously. And Bryce, and C.J. Stroud were kind of in that discussion along the way. Mm-hmm. With St. Clair, if rankings are a fastball competition, throwing the ball the hardest, St. Clair is number one. But there's a lot more that goes into it, and that's going to be part of it with St. Clair. He throws a beautiful deep ball. He could put it on a rope. He hits the seam beautifully.
Ball placement
is phenomenal. Yeah. Like there, I was out there, at the five star at the Jaguars facility, and it was like, man, St. Clair just threw a great ball. I turned around and Juju's bombing one 40 yards right into the breadbasket.
Step for step with your
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. So, St. Clair is definitely more impressive physically. That could be a consideration, but this is going to be maybe a 1-2 situation, however it plays out. But
Bryce Underwood.
Yeah. We have Bryce Underwood.
Bryce Underwood.
So Bryce Underwood is a totally different situation because he doesn't do many events. Yep. He's a kid from Michigan who's going to LSU. Joe Sloan is going to put him in positions to win. LSU, you could talk about Jaden Daniels and his success there coming from Arizona State where his career was sort of fluttering. Like, yep. He had a few years there, and it was sort of on a downhill trajectory. He restarted at LSU and had one of the best seasons in college football history. Ohio State had Joe Burrow there, didn't play him. He transfers, was sort of a non-entity in college football, mm-hmm. and then was the quarterback on one of the best college teams
if
in NFL
best,
history
yeah.
with phenomenal receivers. So LSU puts two receivers in the first round of the NFL draft this year, and now Bryce Underwood is going there into a similar situation. And you want to talk physical tools, he has all of them.
He looks better than both Juju for sure and Tavian. He's got a bigger frame than Tavian.
Yeah.
He looks a little bit more athletic than Tavian, absolutely.
And that's the thing. That's also the thing that we have to consider in today's game is our guys that can move and aren't just statues in the pocket. That's not really how the position is trending. And so Bryce Underwood, who can throw from the pocket but also get out and also run. Like, he's not just escaping pressure. It's like designed runs. It's some RPO stuff. He's super athletic. But the resume on him is not as big. The book, knowing and seeing him at events, is not as big. That being said, a few years ago, we had Arch Manning number one, and we never saw him at anything. He didn't. He literally didn't do a thing.
Underwood has done more than Arch Manning did.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So all of those are going to be factors. Now, what we thought was, like, not a phenomenal quarterback class, like, a year ago maybe, has turned into a very good one. Very good one. We saw a lot of them here. I saw a lot of them recently at Elite 11. We've seen them through 7-on-7 season. And so I think those three will be debated. Is there a right answer? There essentially will be a right answer when they get to college and play through those years and the NFL draft comes and they get drafted in a certain order. Now, is there a right or wrong answer now? Probably not.
Like, we're not going to know for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, you could make an argument for each one why they should be number one or why they shouldn't be number one. And all of them are, like, valid.
Very, very much so. I think Underwood may have the highest ceiling of all three of these guys. He's further from his ceiling right now than the other two. He's got just as much physical ability, if not more. He's going into a great situation at LSU where they're going to be able to coach him up and refine some of those technical issues, mechanical issues that we've seen. And players seem to really like him. You want to talk about the personality stuff that we were talking about with Juju earlier. Underwood hasn't really been able to interact a ton with these highly ranked players at elite events like this. But when you're able to see him in the few that he's been at, players are drawn to him. He has a personality that players like. He's been able to interact with the LSU coaches, and there doesn't seem to be any issues there. He was just down at LSU for a few days working out with those guys, and it seems like there are no real personality quirks that should really be referenced at all during these rankings conversations.
Yeah, the only thing to watch would be Bryce Underwood, Harlan Berry, DeCorian Moore were all committed to LSU at one time, and it looked like the holy trinity of skill players. And now DeCorian Moore had backed off that commitment, but now LSU is back in it after a visit. So that will be interesting to watch to see if Underwood has any influence or sway there.
Yeah.
So we have those three, and then, you know, if you look at historical trends, other than, I think, 2 years, more than three quarterbacks have been taken in the first round of the NFL draft over the last decade or so. And so we're looking for a fourth. And we don't have to look far, I don't think.
No.
I mean, it's not a guarantee, and there are definitely arguments against it and maybe arguments for other players. Deuce Knight possibly being one of them. I mean, if Michael Penix is the number, I think, 12 pick in the NFL draft after fizzling out at Indiana, and then going to Washington and getting totally turned up.
The injury concerns.
Plus the multiple injury concerns. Plus he's old.
Right.
Plus he's very old. So if he's a first-round draft pick and Deuce Knight is basically Michael Penix at the same stage, far beyond what Penix was in high school, far beyond, then that's going to be a discussion unto itself.
Yeah, the mechanics are interesting when you watch him throw the ball. He's a lefty, so it's already a little bit different.
A little quirky,
Yeah, a little quirky, but the ball gets to where it's supposed to go the large majority of the time. Accuracy almost always right there. He does have some balls that flutter on him a little bit, but it's something that receivers can get used to, especially when the ball's already coming out weird for a left-handed quarterback.
Yeah, and it's also something I think it just fools the eye. Yes. Like, it fools our eye that we're watching a lefty quarterback, the ball's spinning the different way, but man, it is smooth and it is effortless, and when he's on, he's on.
Yeah, absolutely. He gets into a rhythm and the ball just gets there 100% of the time at the right time. He fits it into tight windows. Footwork was also really impressive during drills as well. I wasn't really knowing what to expect there, but absolutely right on the money with his footwork too. So a dynamic athlete, can really move the ball with his feet if he needs to, by time, and launches the ball down the field too. And he seems like such a personable guy. Players want to play with Deuce Knight, and was one of the more popular players here.
And the concern over Notre Dame's offense I think they ran the ball 120 times more last year than they threw it. Is he just going to hand the ball off behind a massive offensive line? Well, Mike Denbrock's running that offense now. So he's the guy.
No longer the case, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think that's going to be an issue. Okay. So then we talk about Keelan Russell.
Right.
And I think he probably has the best chance. I put him on a five-star watch after Elite 11. I put him on five-star watch after the Rivals five-star. We re-rank in August. And he's going and in this sort of unique way, it's almost a better situation that he's going to play for Kalen DeBoer at Alabama than Nick Saban, because DeBoer throws the ball a ton. He's telling people he's doing that. Like, if you're a running back, that might turn you off, but Keelan Russell's a quarterback and he's going to love it. So he was committed to SMU. Rhett Lashley is a phenomenal coach, and they throw the ball a whole ton. But Alabama is going to do the same. Just look at, Washington was pretty balanced last year, like this idea that they just threw it all over the place. But I think that they're going to throw the ball a whole lot in Tuscaloosa. And if the comp for Keelan Russell is Jaden Daniels, I think actually Keelan Russell is actually filled out more.
At this stage, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, for 100%. Sure. Yeah, filled out more for sure. But they're very similar players, very dynamic players. And I think he did everything here to make an argument, at least, for five-star.
Yeah, the notes I've got on Keelan, just right off the top, after seeing him just go through a couple of drills on Wednesday, tons of juice, a pop, and just really good feet. I was not expecting to see the polished footwork that I saw on Wednesday. He's crisp in his drops. He understands how to evade pressures, and he squares up and throws that ball down the field. He can throw it into tight windows. He's got a really live arm. He can throw it from multiple arm angles, and certainly a phenomenal athlete. We know that just by watching his film, watching his track numbers, seeing him at multiple events this offseason. Really like the tools that Keelan brings to the field, and really tons of potential to make an early impact at Alabama as well.
Yeah, and I don't know if Tremell Jones is going to end up in the five-star discussion. He's like boringly great.
Always, like, just so consistent with the ball.
So consistent. He's not going to turn the ball over. He's not going to make bad decisions. He's not going to try to make the flash wow throw just to get on Instagram. Like, he's just going to make the smart decision every single time. Now, that could be worth a lot in a rankings process, and it's something that, like, you have to be cognizant of not overlooking and falling in love with, like, the glitz and the glamour, because NFL teams don't want to turn the ball over, and so if he goes to Florida State, or if Florida flips him, which he's not acting
about rankings
at all, that's going to happen. If he goes to Florida State and throws 100 touchdowns and has 15 picks, 10 picks, because he doesn't make bad decisions, that's going to go a long way in the what should be the rankings process, but also how we consider it moving forward.
Yeah, that high floor, right?
Yeah.
Don't make mistakes. Don't give away the game. That's going to help you become the most successful college quarterback you can possibly be without hurting the team. And I think Tremell brings that to the table almost as much, if not more, than some of these other players. He's always accurate with the ball, really good mechanics, sees the field well, can layer his passes, does a good job finding openings in the middle of the field, and is very used to these elite events and throwing to elite prospects, understands the timing that with which he needs to play. So in the five-star discussion, maybe not as much so as Keelan, but there's still a bunch of rankings updates before all of this is final.
Yeah, and six quarterbacks went in the first round this year.
Right.
So if we're at three now, we're halfway there. No, I'm just kidding. We probably don't get to six, but we are certainly open.
There's going to be
30-some-odd
five stars at some point. Right?
Yeah. We have to get to 32, at least 31. So with that wraps up our segment of the Respect My Decision podcast. Stay tuned for more for Greg Smith.
Greg Smith here alongside Jed May from UGASports.com, and we are at the team hotel for Rivals 5-star here in Jacksonville, Florida. And even though we're here for the site of the Georgia-Florida rivalry game, there was a big Georgia commitment that was out there on the field at Rivals 5-star. Talon Taylor, what'd you see out of him, Jed?
Yeah, well, it was my first time seeing him in person. He's from Illinois, Greg, which is your neck of the woods, and he's very, very just all around good at everything, which is shocking to hear from the number 29 player in the country.
Right.
I know, but he's very smooth in and out of breaks. He's explosive. He gets separation. He's got good speed, and he showed great hands. He made a great kind of sliding catch on a fade ball over Eric Winters, Auburn commit yesterday. And Eric Winters has been a monster on the Kane circuit all spring. So, I was very much looking forward to seeing Talon while we were down here, and he definitely lived up to it.
Yeah, he's a kid that, and you and I have talked about him several times. Like I said, he's from my neck of the woods, and so I've seen him now. I think this may be the third or fourth time I've seen him just this offseason, and I'm impressed with him every time because he's just, I describe him as a really smooth wide receiver. Yeah. Like everything just looks really smooth, and more, it looks effortless. It's not, but it looks that way.
Very, like you said, very smooth, and it doesn't look like he's trying.
Right,
really hard.
That's what it looks like, and he's a very polished route runner. I think that's the thing that, and one of the things that we've talked about, kind of in rankings meetings and stuff too, is that you know if people don't jam him at the line of scrimmage, like it's really hard to contain him because he's just such a good natural route runner, and can create separation with ease. He catches everything. You saw when he was down in OT7 a little while ago, like all of those highlight reel catches that he was making down there. He's just a really talented wide receiver that I think will really help to elevate that Georgia room once he gets on the field. I talked to him at Media Day here a couple of days ago. I'm pointing like right next to where we were. And he talked about how he is excited to get into that competitive environment in Georgia and go against those defensive backs. You could tell that while he was on that official visit a little while ago that was kind of talked about during the visit.
Yeah, and it's so funny because I talked to him, I guess, yesterday after camp. And I asked him, you know, hey, how does a kid from Illinois end up wanting to go to Georgia? And he said, well, you know, they just win a lot. And I sent offensive coordinator Todd Monk in my film and said, hey, look at it. And it's so funny to hear that now from a kid, like I said, who's in the top 30 in the country. But that competitive mindset stands out. The winning stands out. Yeah. And even though Georgia's not a place that traditionally has had receivers put up 1,500, 1,600 yards, win Blitnikoffs, whatever, it's a place that – you're going to win, and they will develop you for the NFL. Correct. And I think those are the ultimate kind of selling points, especially, like you said, on that official visit.
Yeah, I think that those things are definitely what helped to win that recruitment out. But there are also a lot of other kids that Georgia is involved in. He was the only commit that was out there on the field yesterday, but several other kids that Georgia's involved with, like I said, who kind of stood out, or who are some guys you want to highlight that you saw yesterday? You're like, okay, I can see why Georgia's recruiting that guy.
Well, if we're talking about kids that stood out, Emmanuel Iheanacho, the 20. number eight in the country, walked in on Tuesday, and he is a man amongst boys here, one, among some of the top players in the country, two, a guy who's a year younger than a lot of the guys here, but he's an absolute monster. He visited Georgia in the spring, and, you know, he's got all the usual Texas, Tennessee, Michigan, Ohio State, the whole shebang after him.
The whole blue chip.
He said he was very impressive in action yesterday as well.
Yeah.
Travis Smith is a receiver Georgia's going after, and it was interesting because there's been some, I guess, question about his pure speed.
Yeah.
And we had the fastest man competition yesterday, and he ran, which was surprising to some of us.
It was surprising.
And he won his heat and ran, you know, averaging out some very unofficial handheld times, about high 4.5s, low 4.6s, which is better than some of the times he's had out there. So he's not the burner guy, but he's a guy who is a good route runner, gets good separation, and he's a big body to catch through traffic. He had one yesterday where a kid held him, and he still pulled out of it and made the catch. So good for him. To show what he's got against some of the top players.
Yeah, and I'm going to stick on that because I felt that was kind of one of the interesting storylines coming in, because Travis Smith is a kid that I hadn't seen in person, but you kind of hear about him. But the thing was, the knock was the speed. And so when he did decide to run past this man, I was like, okay, he wants the show.
Sure, yeah.
He's hearing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
like, oh,
for
man,
sure.
I don't hear the stuff. I don't listen to the noise, blah, blah, blah. And then I think that's one of those cases where he actually did kind of hear that. And he ran. And I thought that he ran well, like you said. He won that first heat and showed well. No surprise that Harlan Berry ended up beating everyone, and especially in that second one when he just decided to really turn it on.
Right.
So that wasn't a surprise. So it's no real disappointment to lose to him. But I thought that Smith was very good. And I think that the skill set that you described of being able to make those tough contested catches, if you're running a pro-style offense in which you're not so like all wide open and spread out, I think that having that type of skill set is something that can be very valuable in that type of offense.
Yeah, and Georgia's had success with guys. Marcus Rosemary Jack Saint is not a burner. You go back to a few years ago, Lawrence Cager wasn't a burner. I mean, George Pickens really isn't even a huge straight line speed guy. I think Travis and him have different games, but you don't necessarily have. I think the speed comes in where you look at, you know, can we utilize this kid on special teams? Can he be a gunner on kickoff or punt or whatever? And that's obviously very important. But Georgia has shown they can take these guys who are four fives, low four sixes, and still be very productive quality. And there's always the old cliche, too, of game speed, right?
Some
guys are faster in pads, running away from defenders rather than in 40s or even in camp settings.
Right.
Camp settings and 7-on-7 settings.
Yeah, and absolutely. And it's funny that we've kind of talking about Georgia, a team that is traditionally run-based, right? Mm-hmm. I think that even though that becomes a sticking point with mm-hmm. the fan base, they have run-based, and we spend all this time talking about wide receivers. I want to switch mm-hmm. it over to running backs. Mm-hmm. Who are the running backs that were down here? Because there were some really talented ones that kind of caught your eye, too, that Georgia's looking at.
Yeah, there's Byron Lewis, who took an official visit to Georgia kind of out of nowhere a couple weeks ago, and he said he had a weekend free and Georgia hit him up and he's like, yeah, sure. So
must be nice. Had a weekend free in Georgia visit is what I'm gonna go.
Yeah, and he's a guy who Georgia was on his radar a long time ago and they kind of had fallen behind, you know, the Florida States and the Miamis of the world for the South Florida guy. But Georgia's right in the thick of this thing now. Yeah. And then you got Anthony Rogers, who's committed to Alabama. He was impressive to me. I watched him more than I watched Byron Lewis yesterday. Just because I was keeping an eye on the team black in the 7-on-7, which also had Talon Taylor.
Yep.
He's very explosive out of the backfield, and I think Georgia is selling him on a James Cook kind of role. We can line you up in the backfield, catch passes. We can split you out wide if we want to. Mm-hmm. And he was very impressive, and he's taking an official to Georgia in the fall as he kind of evaluates. You know, Alabama's going after everybody. I think Auburn's involved, Ohio State. There's a lot of moving pieces as far as running back recruiting goes.
Yeah.
But he's a guy I was very impressed with yesterday.
And it's funny, I just was thinking about and writing about this as I was doing a flip watch piece, mm-hmm. and Turbo Rogers was on that mm-hmm. on that story, because he said, even though he's been committed to Alabama for a while, mm-hmm. he actually told us a couple of days ago that he's kind of taken an open approach to the finish of his recruitment here. And those schools that you mentioned, including Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, he's going to take in-season official mm-hmm. visits to all of those schools. And so it's interesting because, like you said, that he's looking, Alabama's kind of looking. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that I think is actually, this is a thing that's happening in kind of new age recruiting, mm-hmm. right, where people are really honest about some of these situations. I like it. I think it is much better than the kind of the cloak and dagger situation of it, where you got to kind of pry it out of people mm-hmm. and all of that. So for us and our jobs, I like it. For him and his game, I think he's got a really nice game. I do think that his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, I spent a lot of time watching him yesterday in the one-on-one situation mm-hmm. when they were going up against the linebackers. And I thought that his route running, his ability to get in and out of breaks, he could create separation. I thought that it went really well for him. And he did not run in the fastest man competition, which mm-hmm. I was actually surprised about. He said he was a little tight, so he didn't want to go up there.
If your nickname's Turbo, then you're kind of penciled into the competition, too.
Which is funny, because that's what everyone said to him. And I'm like, okay, come on, man. Are we going to take that nickname? Or you're just Anthony now. Like, we can't go
but
with Turbo.
It's so funny, because he's talking about taking in-season. And obviously, he is committed, but like you said, taking official. And he could be, you know, one of the top running backs on the market by the time the season comes, just because so many guys now get their decisions out of the way. Jordan Davison, who's also here, is committing, I think, next week.
Yeah.
So by the time, say, middle of August comes around, most of these guys could be off the board. And again, Anthony Rogers is technically off the board, but taking an open approach. So he could be the top guy that Georgia's going after, trying to add Auburn. If Alabama's trying to keep him, Ohio State, and maybe a team that hadn't even popped up on the radar
which
yet.
Which is always possible.
So his recruitment could be one of the more fascinating ones to watch throughout the fall as it develops. If Georgia and Auburn are considered, if you're Georgia, do you try to get him in for the Auburn game in Athens?
Right.
There's so many of those little nuances.
And you
to
start
it too.
To get those little games, and mm-hmm. it's fun. And part of the thing, too, is I think that the reason, though, that he's so coveted out there, and there's some other guys like that, too, with that kind of that all-purpose style back, mm-hmm. is that you can just fit so many different schemes, and teams can utilize you in so many different ways mm-hmm. that it's really helpful. Because running back is becoming so interesting mm-hmm. when we kind of talk about, you know, we see the kind of the devaluing of the running back at mm-hmm. the NFL level, but I still think in college they're extremely important.
Yeah.
And you see that kind of what some of these recruitments look like right now.
Yeah, and to your point, there weren't many of the Derrick Henry types here. It's the Anthony Rodgers, it's Byron Lewis, it's Jordan Davison. It's the guys who are those weapons out of the backfield. Yep. The days of the 240-pound, 6'3" guy that you get the ball to, I don't want to say they're over, because like you said, in college especially, they're so effective, but that's where football is going, is the guy who can – be at least make the defenses think about it,
right,
coming out of the backfield. And Anthony Rodgers is certainly one of those.
Yeah, he definitely is. Now, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, you know, Georgia's always involved in a lot of those top defensive guys' recruitments as well. Like, who are some of the guys that kind of you were looking at yesterday when it comes to the defensive side that Georgia's looking at?
A lot of younger, 26 defensive backs are here. Jazavian Currents, who he is interesting to me because he knows Georgia's safeties coach, Javaris Robinson. He and Darion Kendrick are from the same area. He remembers Javaris Robinson recruiting Darion Kendrick for 8 or 9 years ago. So that relationship is huge now that he's at Georgia. Simeon Caldwell, another guy from here in Jacksonville, that is very close with Georgia linebacker Troy Bowles. Their relationship is very good. Braylon Womack's another one. Derek Cooper is a guy who is top 30-ish in the country, I think. And he is a guy who Georgia was briefly committed to Georgia for about 3 days, and I think Georgia wants him as a running back, but he also can play defensive back. Like, he's fascinating guy to watch.
Very good.
He's very good, no matter where he plays.
It's funny to see him, and because I, you know, coming into it, he's not one of my guys. He's down in Florida, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, it was interesting to see him play a little bit of both yesterday. And every time, though, I would go to a drill and see him, I'm writing his number down and keeping track, but it was at each position. So I see why there's an issue trying to figure out.
I saw
you.
You were on the other side of the field a minute ago. Yeah. He's a very – and the stereotype with Georgia is if Kirby Smart finds a guy, when in doubt, he's going to move him to defensive back. But I think Georgia really values his skill set as a running back as well in that 26 class.
Yeah, and it makes total sense as to why you would do that. And it's funny, too, that you mentioned, we started off talking about all of these guys in 26 on the defensive side of the ball. I thought that was one of the things that overall stood out to me about yesterday is that we saw a lot of really talented 2026 players. Mm-hmm. A lot of those guys, like we said, kind of involved with Georgia at this point. And so it's really interesting to see some of those guys. You know, you mentioned Simeon Caldwell right from here in Jacksonville. He's an interesting case as well because he's a guy that – and I've run into this a few times, and I'm sure you have too, of guys that started off as safeties, they just keep getting bigger, and now they're just sliding on down, and now all of his offers, he says, are at linebacker now. And he's going to play linebacker, and so you could see when he's running around out there, like, he's raw at the position, but you see the tools on why teams really like it.
Yeah, and he told me yesterday that I asked, what does Georgia like about your game, and that basically what you said, he said college football is evolving. You don't have the 245-pound linebackers anymore. You've got the guys who can cover in space, who can, you know, fill the A gap and make a tackle on the ball carrier. And at Georgia, you know, is it linebacker? Is it kind of the star, the safety linebacker hybrid? You know, they get creative with these guys. But like you said, A, they get bigger, and B, college football is just so much different than
it really is.
It used to be. Again, you don't have the, you know, Brian Urlacher is not the is not the linebacker mold that you get nowadays with a lot. I mean, Logan Anderson was here yesterday, and he, I don't know what, if or what he ran yesterday, but he told me at a Georgia camp earlier this year, he ran a 4.5 flat. Yeah,
very
40.
Fast kid. Like,
and he's
very
he's
fast kid.
A linebacker, a middle linebacker, an inside linebacker. So, the future of football, that's kind of the whole point of this. Yeah. And you can see it if you look at every position.
Yeah, and the other one that comes to mind, though, with that linebacker safety hybrid role is one, but tight end is another one that, like, you just continue to see that. When you look at the tight ends that were out there yesterday, you know, Deshaun Brame was a kid from Kansas that Georgia's not necessarily was not involved with, but he is great out there running around, running routes, catching the ball. You can see his body control and all of that. Corbin Fordham, who is Simeon Caldwell's teammate, they actually, that bowl school down here in Jacksonville actually had four kids that were here yesterday, including I think he got a recent offer from Georgia to put you on the spot, Asher Gito. He's going into his freshman year, he basically is an eighth grader, and has been picking up offers from all of the big blue blood schools here recently. He did the bench press competition yesterday and put up an impressive number at that. Like, there's, like you said, the future is bright college football, and we got to see a lot of those future stars yesterday. Georgia obviously involved with quite a few of those guys. One guy though that Georgia did not get, and it was a surprise, and it happened while we were down here, CJ Wiley. Scale of 1 to 10, how surprised were you that Georgia did not get him in the end? He committed to Florida State.
You know, yeah, it's the surprise factor of not getting him is probably like a 5, just because no one really knew for sure. Now, the fact that it was Florida State and not LSU was like an 8, because this whole LSU has come on so strong over the past month or so in that recruitment, and so that's kind of what it seemed like, Georgia-LSU battle. And then the last visits to Florida State, and he already had the commitment date set, and I think Florida State just locked it down. while he was there over the weekend. But it's funny, you watch the video and like there's like a stunned silence. Right. His parents didn't, were like, what? So I don't think any of the schools knew. I don't know that any of the parents knew. I think it was a surprise to pretty much everybody. But that's a guy that Georgia's been targeting for a long time. I don't expect him to stop. You know, he even said after his commitment, he said, yeah, you know, I'll probably be back at Georgia. They're right down the road. So right. And he gave the whole, you know, I haven't signed any papers yet, yeah. And that whole thing. So we saw pretty much the same scenario with KJ Bolden.
Yep.
Last year, Georgia looked in good shape. He committed to Florida State, even same school, and Georgia keeps on him and flipped him on signing day. So does the same thing happen with CJ Wiley? I don't know, but Georgia's going to give it a good run for
sure. Yeah, and I think that you always kind of have to stay, and this is always, and we've seen this now with a couple different recruitments, even in this cycle, when you said the thing about it, them being down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you know, you have schools, now Florida State's not out of the region per se, but you have especially those kids that commit to schools that are out of the region, USC, mm-hmm. I'm looking at you.
Sure.
But the kids are in Georgia. Like, it's tough because mm-hmm. it ends up that proximity when you can just go over and go down the road and visit mm-hmm. the school. It's a comfort level. And then it's like, man, do I really want to leave? In this case, mm-hmm. like, do I even really want to leave the state? Do I have to able to play big-time college football?
And that's what, talking to Justice Terry, after speaking of USC, after he decommitted, he was like, yeah, you know, I thought about it. I didn't want to be that far from my you know, I'm big on family. I didn't want to be far from my family. Didn't want to be far from my mom. Of course, the flip side of that is, you know, USC is the same distance away now as it was in March. But
right.
But whatever.
Right.
But yeah,
it does weigh.
Isaiah Gibson, who was committed to USC, decommitted and now has committed to Georgia. And again, like you said, Florida State's different because it's not that far. Tennessee's not that far. Alabama and Auburn aren't that far. Right. We're talking about USC or even Oregon to a certain extent.
Yeah, too. Oregon becomes an issue.
Then you're like, man, it's a flight and a long flight to get my parents out here or for me to get home. So, I think it weighs on these kids a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, on the flip side of the CJ Wiley news, Georgia has had a great month of June, right? This has become, like, the month in college football recruiting.
Yep.
We all are basically on coffee IVs and no sleep. And it's because of the things that are happening at Georgia and other places where Georgia, I think, you'll know this for sure, 7, I believe, commitments in the month of June.
Sounds right.
And so, like, what has kind of led to this run here of commitments that Georgia has had and the success that they're having right now?
I think they don't pressure kids necessarily to commit on these official visits. They encourage kids to take visits, but then you also have the kids like Talon Taylor, who came at first May 31st through June 2nd, and he's weighing an official visit to Ohio State, and he's like, nah, Georgia's where I want to be.
Yep.
So you get kids like that. And then you also have all the guys who have committed over the past 4 or 5 days who, as soon as they get done with the officials, are like, I want to get this over with.
Yeah.
I want to get – like Zayden Walker was another guy. He committed after his Georgia official because he's not a huge lover of the recruiting process.
That's
like,
a great
I just want
to
get
put
it done.
That, yes.
So this – obviously the dead period started on, I guess, Monday.
Yep.
And so these kids are like, okay, well – if I want to get it done before the season, I might as well go ahead and do it now. So Georgia's seen Dontrell Glover come on board, Isaiah Gibson. I think there's another one I'm missing. Tyler Williams, the receiver, committed yesterday.
Todd Robinson.
So, Todd Robinson was another guy who took his Georgia official and shut things down after. Yeah. So I think it's a combination of the kids who take the official and realize that's where they want to be, and also the kids who just want to get it. Even July. Like, July is so busy for the first few weeks. Of kids who want to get it done, and then they start, you know, practice at the end of July. So get it done before your senior season and let it roll out from there.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of kids, you know, we started that talking about how we're tired at the end of the process.
Yes.
They are too,
yeah.
Right?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
it's
for
a
sure.
thing where, like, and you, the more you do it and you talk to people, and you're like, man, this is an exhausting process for the athletes and their families as well, right? And so I totally understand how you get to that point to where, like, if you go to Georgia or wherever and you're like, man, I really like that. They want me to be a part of their class, like, and they're serious about me and I am too. Like, I just want to end the process. Like, I'm done with it.
Yeah.
And just kind of lock it in and just kind of end that, because you look up and you've done, you know, a month full of official visits. You've maybe done OT7. You've come down to Rivals 5-star. Mm-hmm. You've competed here. Like, there's just a lot that goes on, and this kind of compresses. It's about a 6-week because it expands. It starts before June with those events and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're a quarterback, you got even more stuff going on, right? And so you're going to Elite 11 and all these other things that are going on. And so it does become a lot, and you want to just go ahead and get it over with until it then all starts again.
Until we get to the end of July. Even if you go back into the spring, you know, you're from, say, March 1st to April, the middle of April, you're squeezing spring practice visits, and that's as little as it seems to matter sometimes. There's school involved. You got to do schoolwork and all the stuff that goes into that.
Well, in the summer, think about it. The amount of times that I've run into this summer of guys saying that, hey, I'm in summer school. Can I talk to you later?
Because everyone wants to enroll early.
So there's also that. The other side of wanting to enroll early is that you've got to do all these extra classes.
Yeah, and then but then like your spring practice visits. And then May, you've got your own spring practice at your high schools and 7-on-7 stuff. Elite 11. And then you've got 4 weekends that are usually penciled in for officials. Plus, you've got, like Isaiah Gibson took a midweek to Ohio State. Yeah. Guys do those because you don't have school in person anyway. So, yeah, by the end of June, you're kind of tapped out.
Yeah.
And if it's – I totally understand the guys who just say, look, I want to get it done. I want to focus on my senior season. Because a lot of these guys, you know, they're you know, chasing repeat state titles, first state titles, whatever. So
they want to enjoy that last ride with their teammates too, all of that.
Because game day visits in the fall, you know, just to do the math on it, you play Friday night, then you got to go get on a plane
somewhere. So much harder than I think people realize the logistics of that.
Yeah, and it's amazing to think. Like for Georgia, for example, you're flying into Atlanta, and then it's an hour and a half drive to Athens. And so you're playing a high school game at, you know, you get done at 10:30, out of the locker room at 11, and you go, you know, if you're Justice Terry, for example, and you want to go to USC, it's a, you know, hour and a half, 2 hour drive to get to the airport, and your flights. Like, it's, again, there's, when you really sit and think about it, it's a lot harder for these kids to get places, a lot harder to get there, and a lot harder on them to get there than I think a lot of people realize it is.
Definitely, yeah. It's one of those things that's really fascinating because it's kind of the underbelly of the sport and kind of what drives it. And it totally makes you then understand why what we were talking about kids deciding in the end, you know what, I'm just going to stay closer to home because it's so much more convenient. And then that's just the recruiting process. It's then when you actually get there and then have your family trying to come to games, it's that same process all over again. They've got to get off work. Like, it's all sorts of stuff that goes into that. It's just a really fascinating thing to do, but we will definitely continue those conversations here on this podcast as we're going to tap out for this one. It was great having a conversation with Jed. We'll definitely have to have you on again.
For sure.
Jed May, I'm Greg Smith. We'll catch you later.